Welcome to Envision This, connecting you to visionaries of a more resilient, equitable, and earth-friendly future. Envision This, creating greater productivity, peace, and a more positive mindset through consistent, deeper connection with the natural world. That's the vision of our guest tonight, Hobie Hare. We invite you to call in to speak with him and with us during the episode if you're listening live now. The number is 646-652-2235. Hobie Hare is a nature connection mentor and a life coach. Through his company, Your Life Nature, he helps busy clients move from frustrated and struggling to experiencing more peaceful, passionate, and purposeful lives. Through consistent, deeper connection with the natural world, as well as with their own life nature, he helps them to heal both. So, welcome, Hobie.
Thank you very much, Earl and Mary. Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you. We're honored to have you here. Hobie, what's the key for you for embodying and expressing your own unique wild nature?
A lot of it is just being able to place yourself where your feet are, and that could be in a place like Tokyo, Japan, home of 20 million people, or it could be in Missoula, Montana, where I live, 70,000 people, or in the woods of Maine. But at any rate, it's really just about slowing down, taking some deep breaths, developing and using all of your senses, and just being more aware of what's feeding and nourishing you, because in any given moment, nature's there to support all of us.
How did you discover nature as a key?
I'll give you the shorter story, because this could be a one-hour story in itself. But when I was a kid, I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and it was becoming rapidly urbanized and suburbanized. And in my own youth, I saw lots of big woods and streams disappear, becoming turned into subdivisions. And I just kind of felt that loss acutely in my own life. But my brothers and sisters and I would roam farther and farther afield, as would our friends, finding more remote woods that still weren't turned into subdivisions or streams where we could fish and play. And I just remembered when I was in college and having some hard times how powerful and nurturing that was to me. And that helped me, beginning in my college years, stay focused and choose a major and find a career path, as well as later in my life when times were tough, and it just helped guide me through some really challenging times and give me hope and possibility instead of what I was feeding and feeling and receiving elsewhere in my life.
Why do you think that reintroducing yourself to nature is a key that will open important doors for so many other people?
Yeah, I know for many people, when they're going to work, whether they're in a traffic jam or they're going from their car or their commute to their cubicle, and if they're coming home and then just, you know, watching a lot of TV, and especially if the news and the environment surrounding them, it can be negative or at least not encouraging through just a lot of media and a lot of sometimes family or work influences. It's really important to unplug and to really take time for yourself and really provide for your own self-care instead of just letting other people's narratives and stories drive your life and tell you what to do or what they think is important. I think our own voices can really get shut out if we're not careful, and that's where nature connection comes in. It really helps you put your own care first, and if you can do that, which can be done quite easily and inexpensively, from there it ripples out, influences your family members, your loved ones, your colleagues, people in your neighborhood, people in your house of worship, you know, whatever you spend your time, it ripples out. And when you do that, it gives other people courage to do the same thing, to put their own care first and put their passion first instead of just thinking, I've got to do this career because it's going to pay me this much money, or I've got to postpone important to me until someone's out of school or someone's retired or I've got this much money in the bank. I think it's really important that we start where our feet are now, and I help people do that.
Mm-hmm. Could you share with us the parable about a wolf that encounters and speaks with a domesticated dog sleeping outside its master's home?
Yes. I forget who originally shared the story, but there's a story about a wolf that visits a dog, and there is no combat. There's no ugliness here. It's just kind of like a encounter. And I believe it was a folktale told somewhere in the Middle East or maybe somewhere else in the so-called Old World. And the dog is visited by the wolf, and the wolf says, you know, what's the story here? I mean, you know, how do you live? He goes, you've got a collar and a chain on you. He goes, well, you know, I get a couple square meals a day, and I get a warm place to stay at the end of the night, and, you know, my master looks out for me. And he goes, well, what's the chain and the collar for? He goes, well, I don't really know. And the wolf just kind of shrugs and leaves, and he's thinking, well, that's not what I want in my life. I don't want to live on someone else's terms. And just to give you a little backstory, I do love dogs. Our family has had them before. I think they're wonderful pets, and I think wolves also have a place on the planet. But it's just a good analogy to me about how, you know, are we living lives on our terms or someone else's?
Yeah, I love that.
I know when I was in college many, many years ago, 50 years ago, as a matter of fact, I graduated. I went to college in New York City, and I would get overwhelmed with the city and the crowds and whatever. And I would go down behind the campus into Riverside Park, and people would say to me, don't go there. It's dangerous. You know, you can get mugged or thugged or whatever. But I absolutely had to go there because otherwise the subways and the clamor and all of the people would have driven me crazy.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. I think it's good to be aware of your surroundings, and some of the ways in which I coach and mentor people, I will let people know. I say, you know, don't do things that put you at risk, or if it's easier and you feel safer to do something, go with a friend or let people know where you are. But at the same time, there's this part of our soul and our sanity that's begging for some solitude, some space, some time, some silence. And I help people create that no matter where they live. And that makes me think about one person who I was working with a couple of years ago who has since moved to a smaller city, and we just basically talked about how she could have more nature in her office, how she could have more nature on her balcony, and how she could create blocks of time on a daily and weekly basis where she could do things that felt safe to her but also felt nourishing to her soul, so she could run on a full gas tank of energy instead of feeling overwhelmed and cut off and just shut down.
How do you help people create greater productivity, peace, and a more positive mindset through consistent, deeper connection with the natural world?
Okay. Again, it's sort of like something we could talk about at least for an hour, but I'll give you the shorter version of that. And that's basically the first step is when people reach out and ask for a complimentary 30-minute nature discovery call. I've got a few slots every week for that purpose. I get to know people first, no obligation, see sort of what their pain point is, what they'd like to do in their life, what they'd like to have more of, how nature could help them be better at work, more peaceful at home, more productive in all areas of their life, and help them figure out their priorities. And if things go well with that first call for both of us, what we do is we have a second call. They look at the program guide, and we look at which program would probably best suit them. And I work with people anywhere from 3 to 6 to 12 months at a time, so it's not just a one-shot visit to the doctor. It's more helping people build some really good habits and some routines, and I give them and teach them a lot of tools to help them get to where they want to be. And it looks like in person, if you're in Missoula, Montana, we meet in person once a month, and then we've got support calls over the phone plus email, and we also communicate by snail mail. And then for people who live farther afield, there's usually 2 calls per month that are live. There's fun homework to do in between. There's a check-in phone call also. And then also we do a lot of fun nature connection activities where they might send me a postcard, let me know how things are going, or I might send them something I found that I believe will support them. So it's a good mix of on the phone, in person, snail mail, some email, and then there's a lot of surprises in the way too, along the way, to help people once I, you know, get to know them better, they get to know me better too.
Wonderful. You speak about also helping them to discover their own life nature. Can you tell us what's involved with that?
Yes, that's going to vary quite a bit with each person, but what we do is sort of like an inventory and an informal assessment where people just share, you know, what they really like in their life. And we might look back to a time in their life when they did things that they really enjoyed that they're not doing right now. And we look at what are the obstacles in the way. Why aren't they doing those things? Why can't they do that? And I help them schedule that and make it a priority in their life. And it's going to vary quite a bit, but I work with someone, let's see, about 3 years ago, who was also a life coach who wanted to kind of change how she did things. She wanted to stretch and challenge herself, and she did a solo canoe trip by herself with her family support. And we brainstormed activities that she could do on that trip so she could go deep and come back from that trip with some ideas about how to grow her business and how to change it, because she wanted to be more reachable, more vulnerable, and serve more people. And that was pretty exciting because she lived about 2,000 miles from where I do, and we basically helped plan this trip, and she stayed in touch with her family the whole time. And when she came out of that trip, she had a lot of things that she wanted to change with her business, but we focused on two or three things that she really wanted to do the most, and I helped guide her to that spot where she could serve more people but also be a lot more visible, because before that time she was a little bit, feeling like she wasn't ready to put herself out there to serve the world. And I knew she was ready, but I think she just needed some baby steps and some confidence building activities to help her realize that her message can't wait. People are waiting to receive her gifts right now.
And I also think, as I hear your message, and it includes this, that our personal nature reflects and is being reflected by what we are creating in the nature of the habitat. For example, I really think that our mentality, which is very top down, very alienated, and that sort of thing, is mirrored in what we're doing to nature. I mean, you go into a lot of places and, you know, things are being torn up for housing and this, that, and the other thing. And I really think that what we're doing is we're actually creating a mirror image of ourselves when we're destroying nature. And also, it's also reflecting back on us that we are so alienated from who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in there too, well, let me back up. I totally agree with you. I think that what happens sometimes is that we can get so busy that we can just think the world's going to be chop-chop 24-7, I got to get this done, or if only I had 20 more hours in my life to get my to-do list done this week, then I'd have time for nature connection or, you know, visiting a relative or volunteering. And I like to help people flip that pyramid and see, what do you have in your life right now that's really clutter, meaningless to you, or it's not that important, but you've lost your enthusiasm doing, and what can you bring back into your life that's really critical and it feeds your soul? And let's find a way to build that, whether it's 10 minutes a day during the weekdays, and then it's a little bit longer on the weekends, and maybe on the once a month it's you do that thing or something for 2 hours to feed your soul instead of feeling like I never have time, there's not enough time, or if only I had this much money in the bank, I could relax and do what's important in my life. And I think we can, if we're not careful, cut ourselves off from nature to the point where we feel like you just don't know, even know where to begin to get started to get your life and your values back in your life. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes, very much.
Certainly.
So.
Okay. You gave one good example of a busy client moving from frustrated and struggling into a more peaceful, purposeful life. Could you give us one or two more stories of the kinds of changes that you help people make?
Yes, definitely. I work with someone who's a health coach who was struggling with a lot of her own health issues and just feeling really scattered between wanting to do things on her own and having opportunities to reach out to people and do some things that matter to her, but in some ways not, and feeling like she had to say yes to every opportunity in her area, and for not much money. And she was doing the math, and I was doing the math with her on the phone, thinking, okay, this is not going to work. How can you establish yourself as, you know, an authority and a speaker? How can you get your word out there and bypass this health club, who really just didn't want to pay her very much and charge, you know, the people coming to hear her speak? And so we started thinking about ways she could do that, and she was working with people one-on-one and in small groups and doing things in other locations that weren't competing with that health club out of town. And finally, you know, she decided not to renew that contract she had with them, and she found another healthcare practitioner to work with who was open to her modality of helping people heal, and things are going a lot better for her now. But for a while, she felt like she had to give away the store in order to get her foot in the door. And I think it's one of my gifts is helping people identify their gifts and stand up for their value and know that they can make a living and more sharing their gifts with the world instead of thinking, oh, this is random. I didn't go to college for this, or it's just an innate talent. You know, why should I give away, you know, my natural gifts for free? And my feeling is you don't always have to have, you know, a degree behind your name in order to stand up and share and help other people change their lives. I'm not saying go see a quack if you've got serious illness, but what I am saying is find people in your life who can support you and encourage you and hold that vision of, you know, your best vision and give you the accountability and the support to move forward instead of just thinking, oh, you know, I can't do this because I don't have this education or I don't have this, you know, expertise, or I can't share my gifts in this particular setting. You can still do it somewhere else and start from there.
We're talking with Hobie Hare, Nature Connection Mentor, Life Coach, and founder of Your Life Nature, which you can check out at his website, www.yourlifenature.com. Please join our conversation with Hobie by calling in to 646-652-2235. That number again is 646-652-2235. Hobie is also an avid outdoor nature photographer. His images available at his website are stunning and deeply inspiring. Hobie, how did you come to be such an outstanding photographer? What got you into photography?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm really not sure on all levels about that, but I feel like I've got an eye for taking photographs. I've shot many, many rolls throughout my life, and I still shoot film primarily. Took a photography class when I went to Virginia Commonwealth University my last year of college. And I just love going into the dark room, and just time would disappear. 5 or 7 hours would pass, and I'd still be in there happy, developing film and seeing what I got, and just oblivious to whatever the weather was happening outside. But I feel like I notice or pay attention to the light in different situations, and I feel like in many ways, just when I hold open that camera, it's just very intuitive. But I just love being able to capture images and scenes of places where it might be hard for a lot of people to get to because of time or maybe physical abilities. And I just love being able to share that with people who can smile and feel like, oh my God, that's a beautiful picture of the Tetons or Glacier Park or Joshua Tree National Park or the Boundary Waters. And it's pretty cool knowing that people have photos like that in their homes and offices where they can just light up and be inspired and be more peaceful, be more calm in their lives.
What other gifts and inspirations do you share at your website?
Let's see, everything from nature connection meditations and quotes to the photographs that you can enjoy, whether you're purchasing them as a big print or as a greeting card. I've also got a couple of free sample recordings that people can sign up for, too. And the biggest thing, I think, is just being able to share my own story about how Nature Connection has changed my life, and also how that's also helped other people do the same. And if you guys would like, I could lead us on a quick visualization at some point during our call today, if you like.
Wow, yes. Yes, is it now the appropriate time, or you want to go ahead with questions more towards the end?
I would say, what's your take on that?
I think now would be a wonderful time.
Perfect. Okay. So for people who are listening, if you're driving, please don't do this, okay? Listen to the call later. And if you're operating heavy machinery, same thing. But if you're not driving or operating heavy machinery, just take a moment where you are. And if you can, stand up and stretch. Maybe just move your arms around a little bit. And maybe roll your shoulders a little bit. And if you're able to look out a window, please do so for a moment. Just kind of notice the light, the time of day, where you are. Notice if there's any wind or breeze coming by, or if there's any birds out there, or other animals, or other people. And take a couple of deep breaths. And go ahead and sit back down in your chair, or at your desk, or your sofa, wherever you are. And close your eyes. Take a few more deep breaths. And I want you to call to your mind, or to imagine in your mind's eye, a tree that loses leaves every fall. And I'd like you to imagine that you're looking at a tree that speaks to you. Maybe it's a tree close to your home or your apartment building, or it's on your way to work, or it's somewhere in your favorite place in the world to go to vacation to. But there's this beautiful tree, and with your eyes closed, you can really see the beautiful colors it's turning now that it's October. And imagine there's a really slight breeze, and it's just making those leaves shimmer. Some of them might be golden or crimson. Some of them might be still a little bit yellow or green. But this tree is so peaceful, and you can just feel its life. And imagine being able to sit down next to this tree, and the ground is dry. It's really comfortable. And your cell phone's turned off. Your to-do list is put away. You've got all the time in the world. You don't have to be anywhere, anytime soon. All you got is right now, this moment. And as you lean against this tree or sit underneath it, think about what's attracting you to this tree. Is it its beauty, its age, its height? Maybe its tranquility, its ability to put down roots right where it is, right in this moment. Or maybe you're thinking, you know, this tree is really, really a strong tree. It doesn't worry about yesterday or fret about tomorrow either. I'd like you to take another couple of deep breaths in the presence of this magnificent tree and this very life-giving tree. And know that you can go back to this tree anytime that you like, whether you're in the middle of the workday, or if you're having trouble sleeping at night, or if you just need to take a break from something else going on in your life, you can just call in your mind's eye this beautiful tree. And you can do this anytime or anywhere to help you be more grounded, more at peace, more calm, more focused, more optimistic and confident and upbeat, and more on fire. So take a few more breaths. And when you're ready, open your eyes and come back and put a smile on your face.
I don't think we have to put a smile on our face. I think it's automatically there as a part of the meditation. Thank you.
Exactly.
Yes, thank you.
Looking out our window, our grapevines have now pretty much blocked a good part of the window, but the contrast between where the leaves are covering and where there are hanging bunches of grapes and then where the light is showing through, really, really quite beautiful.
It is. And the lighting at this time of year in the Northern Hemisphere is just fantastic. From now to about mid-November, and every day just seems to have its different kind of hue and color and breeze and wind. And for a lot of people, this is sort of like the golden time between the heat of the summer and whatever winter may bring. And so it's, for many people, their favorite time of year.
Mm-hmm. It is mine.
You say that you have a four-step nature connection process that you use with your clients. Would you like to tell us something about those four steps?
Yes. I studied a couple of years ago. I took a long workshop with a gentleman named John Young. That's J-O-N, and then Young, Y-O-U-N-G. And it was really neat because I realized that, you know, we're doing a lot of the same things. But one thing I loved that he said was that really two ways to help people gain a deeper connection to nature and also to themselves and wherever they live. He said the first portal or the fourth way is helping people develop all of their senses. And that's my first step is doing that. And the other part is just having a really good mentor, someone who can help you grow and help you identify your blind spots if you can't find them, but also to help you take an honest look at where are you strong and where would you like to grow and provide that container so you can do that. But it's a four-step process called the Muse Method. And one of the steps, the M, is to make connection with nature a joyful habit. And I help people do that all over the world. And the second step is to use all of your senses. And that's really the foundation, no matter where I start with someone or where they are in their lives. It's building the foundation from there. And then we get into the other steps as we get deeper into working together. But the fun part is helping people remember what brings them joy. And for many people in North America, especially in our culture, we've been trained so much to use our eyes to get all of our information. And I would argue that many people's eyes are tired from the computer and from a lot of reading. And it's a really good way to get data in nature, too, but we also still have the hearing, the smelling, the tasting, the sensing, the development of your intuition, kind of dusting off that, you know, any cobwebs in there, and just really honing your skills so when you're out in nature and when you're out in the world of commerce or wherever else you are, that you've got so many other ways of receiving information besides just looking and deciding. And I think that that's a real gift that we've always had, but since we've become more agricultural and then also since we've become more commercial and industrialized, for many people, visual is the way they get their information. Some is auditory, but if you're watching, you know, some TV shows or some news programs, you might just feel like you're bombarded. And how do you kind of cut through the noise and the clutter to figure out what's really important in your life? And so I help people really develop the senses above and beyond seeing and hearing. And we pay a lot more attention to noticing and feeling and sensing and intuiting. And I help people do everything from journaling to doing more art in their lives or how to bring those things into their workplaces or into their families or how to do activities with other people they care about that will help more than one person get outside and just remember what nature is like, which is being open to wisdom, being open to guidance, being open to inspiration and creativity instead of like, oh, I saw something on the internet and told me I should do this, or I saw this article that says five reasons why this is going to hell in a handbasket and it's too late or whatever. I mean, do you follow me on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I as you were talking, my wife probably gets tired of me saying this, but when we talk about nature, nature has the meanings of birds, bees, and coconut trees and that sort of thing, but it also means essence. And I think we don't really get that the demolishing of nature that we're doing is also kind of a demolishing of our own psyche, you know, in terms of we mirror that. We're alienated, and therefore, you know, nature is kind of responding to that, of course, because of our behavior.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
That's okay.
You bring up some really valid points, and maybe the flip side is some people feel like, you know, they can't have a amazing nature connection unless they climb into the Himalayas or they float the Grand Canyon for 28 days on the Colorado River. And those things are epic and worthwhile and worth shooting for, but at the same time, what's going on in your life the rest of the year when you're not able to spend 28 days on the Grand Canyon or climb something in Nepal or do something else that's memorable, magnificent? Sometimes improving your connection to nature. It could be as simple as having flowers on your desk throughout the year, or eating something that's local, or growing a garden and sharing something with your neighbors, or, you know, making something from natural materials really close to your home. It's the little things that add up. They can make a huge difference. They can give people hope. It's amazing how many people don't have a living plant in their household. Just being able to have something in your life that you care for, or you nurture, who you watch grow over time, can help you be more rooted to the nature that we do have, and that can re-nourish lost ties that we might have to with nature and all that supports us. So my feeling is, if you can bring more nature into your life, no matter where your feet are, and I know we all can, that can make a big difference, and that can start to turn the tide of what you're saying and what you're sharing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And as you were speaking to that, I remember I was raised in Baltimore, right outside of Baltimore. And we lived in a townhome, but there was a little patch of grass, and I used to just lay out on this grass and watch the clouds. And that's a lot of why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Good.
And sometimes we can set our sights way too high and upset ourselves rather than help ourselves. I know at one point about, I guess it must be 10 years back now, I decided that before I became terribly old, I was going to climb Mount Katahdin, which is the mountain here in Maine that's really iconic and whatever. Well, it was way, way out of my reach to do that because of my particular physical condition and age and what all. And I find that taking small trips, like recently we went to a beach that we love and took our dog there, and the tide was low enough to be able to climb a little ways up the rocks into a kind of cave in the cliff, and sit in that cave and sit in that little enclosure and look out onto the wide ocean beyond. And the pleasure that I took in that was as great, perhaps, as if I had tried and either injured myself or just plain discouraged myself with climbing Mount Katahdin.
And you bring up a really wonderful point, and that's sometimes just getting to a place that feels comfortable. It feels like it's a bit of a stretch, but it's not overwhelming. And then you let nature come to you, and it's like you're showing up for nature, and look what you receive, this beautiful ocean day with the waves and the surf. And just you're describing that brings me right to that beach. I can really feel the excitement and the comfort and the reassurance and the joy of just being there.
Burl was just reminding me, there was one time when we climbed down the rocks. It must have been about 30 feet anyway, onto the beach below, and we were sitting behind this cliff. We were sitting behind it and really enjoying our discussion and being there on the beach and the sunshine and everything, and not paying any attention to the fact that the tide was coming in. And then all of a sudden, this huge wave splashed up and over the cliff and hit us.
And it was like slow motion.
Yeah, it was a shock, and yet it was so wonderful. Just absolutely glorious that all of a sudden here was the ocean right with us. And of course then we had to scurry back up the cliff.
It sounds like it ended well, and I just want to add that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to add that as listeners are you know, enjoying the show, just to remind everybody listening in that sometimes, yeah, you're not physically able to go to these places, like to the ocean or to, you know, a place where there's trees or to the top of a mountain, but you can always carry a photograph, or maybe it's a painting that you made or a painting you like, or just a small postcard or something that you can stick in a briefcase, that you can stick in one of your favorite books. So if you're traveling by train or in an airplane, or you're just on the go, you've got a quick picture you can pull out, maybe it's an illustration, that brings you to a place where you can tap into that peace, that restoration, that rejuvenation. So that's just one, you know, quick tool in the toolbox I'd like to offer people. When you can't physically make it to a place that gives you that inspiration, you can use a picture to do the same thing.
You're reminding me that the other day when we were seeing the fall colors, I picked up a beautiful red maple leaf, and it was gorgeous, and brought it home with me. And when I got home, put it between two pieces of, wax paper, and ironed it flat so that the wax went into the leaf, so that I would have something just as a little memorial. It may not last terribly long, but it takes me to that place and that moment and that time.
Yeah, and as long as, you know, the regs wherever you are say it's fine to take a flower or a leaf or a shell or whatever, that's awesome. I think, you know, for many people, they've got mementos in their homes, or rocks, seashells, a plant, a flower, a photograph, a picture. And maybe it's something that was made out of wood or stone that's carved. It looks like an animal or a flower, but it's so, that's the word I'm looking for, elemental, just to be able to stop and connect with something that is so life-giving. But also, when we do that, we're also reminded of the lessons that nature has for us. Like, for example, nature... time is measured in a different way. The cycles of the seasons, the rhythms of the seasons, just seeing beautiful flowers that are very colorful right now, about to turn brown eventually, and then they're going to become part of the earth and help feed the next generation of trees and plants. It's nature so much to teach us if we slow down and just kind of dive deep and allow nature to teach us.
And you're making an extremely important point, because one of the things that when you really get in tune with nature, you realize that everything that is done has an effect on everything else. For example, the falling leaves in autumn, you know, is also the beginnings of the next spring, and, you know, it helps to fertilize the ground and makes it richer. And yeah, it's just an amazing process. And On op-ed, I get into a lot of conversations with Rob Call, the main editor, regarding bottom-up spirituality. And basically what we're talking about, though, it's more than bottom-up. It's systemic. In other words, you know, just – and I try to get this across to a lot of my readers, is that even in this simple act of breathing, we're actually participating in the construction of the atmosphere in relationship to the trees, which breathe out oxygen, and then we breathe that in, and then we breathe out carbon dioxide. So it's a win-win for both trees and humans. And, you know, it's a very simple example, but I think one of the things in going with nature and ecology, you know, it's not just about, well, let's fix the planet. It's also about realizing that we belong and we're participants.
By being active, you know, we create results one way. By being inactive or not engaged or not involved, we allow other things to develop. And, you know, we could all as a species, you know, not be here in X number of years. And nature will go on without us. But I believe that personally, that being here is part of a gift that we have. And to me, the greatest gift is being good stewards. And for people who don't know how to do that or not sure or think it's too late, I would just say, as long as we're alive, it's not too late. And it all begins with taking care of our own backyards and taking care of ourselves, and then from there, letting that ripple out and influence and inspire other people. And, you know, it's great that, you know, three of us and many people listening or care about the environment. There, I know there's other people out there who'd like to have a more just economy. I say go for it. Work on that. You know, if that's your gift, that's your gift. But claim one of your gifts, or claim, you know, a few of them, and start sharing them and doing something. And if everybody does that, the world will be a better place for everybody and everything that calls it home.
Yeah, one of the things I think about is, and you know, I want you to comment on this, but like with,
sure,
with a lot of the different movements, for example, there's alternative currencies, time banks, and this sort of thing. And I think those types of alternatives, including permaculture, which is you know, dead on. But I think all those together also can also help us to become less alienated from nature and also begin the healing of the planet. And I think ultimately we have to really realize that if we want to heal the planet, we need to heal ourselves.
Absolutely. Because if we're, there's no way we're going to create lasting change if we're trying to force our changes or our particular vision of what life should look like on other people. I think we see enough evidence of the contrary, that not working out so well. But at the same time, it's sort of like what you said, there's permaculture movements, there's local food movements, there's, you know, organic food movements. And I think it's great that as people become more connected with the food, where it's grown, and as people eat things that are more in season or grown as close to home as possible, you get to know the people who are part of that web of life. And you feel like, yeah, I'll do that instead of going to a big box store and getting, you know, whatever I need. So I think that the more we get connected to our food, we get connected to the people who are producing it, and we get to know them and their families, their stories, their hopes, their dreams. And to me, it's like decentralizing in some ways, and just really spending your dollars wisely where you feel like they're going to make the biggest difference. And part of that too is, like you said, the local currencies, where if you buy local or regional, especially a private entrepreneur or, say, someone who has a mom-and-pop shop, that money cycles through the economy, the local economy, much more often than, say, going to a big-box store and buying all your food there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Please tell our listeners about the tours that you lead of national parks and other wild places.
You bet. I just came from a tour in September. It was a lot of fun. I work with a company out of Bozeman, Montana, and I exclusively guide with them and their partners. And we went to the north rim of the Grand Canyon, and we went to Zion National Park, and we went to Bryce. And I've done other trips outside the Northern Rockies, too. My greatest joy, though, is taking people on tours of Yellowstone National Park, the Tetons, and also Glacier National Park in Montana. I was a park ranger in Yellowstone for about 8 seasons, and I guided there year-round for about, 6 seasons. And it's just a place that has so much wonderment and mystique and power and mystery and wildness. It's just, for everybody out there, if you've never been to Yellowstone, you got to get there at least once in your life. And go ahead.
Is there a story or an example or a memory from your time in Yellowstone National Park that you could describe to us?
Sure. A story about guiding or a story about Yellowstone and me personally, or what would you like?
Sure. Either, whatever moves you.
Okay. Well, I'll do both. I can remember... let me see, I want to protect this person's confidentiality. Okay, so there's this person who was on a tour a couple of years ago, recently a widower. His wife passed after a long illness, and he had some young kids, and it had been probably 2 years since he had done much for himself. And he came on this winter tour of Yellowstone. And, you know, I knew all this up front because he shared it with me, you know, the first day. And he said something along the lines of, well, if I'm quiet on this trip, you know, please understand. And what was really cool and powerful about this trip was that over the 6 days that we were together with about 15, 20 people altogether, was that he just started to come out of his shell, and he was able to describe his recent loss in a different perspective, and he saw nature out there every day, different species trying to make a living in one of the harshest environments in the lower 48 states. And he was especially drawn to the bison because some of the bull bison will stay by themselves in the winter, and they'll just trot through deep snow to get to wherever it is they want to go. And he just really said how much that Yellowstone gave him hope, and part of it was just watching these animals trying to make a living in such a hard landscape and seeing that there are moments of humor and play and moments of peace and joy. And he just really said that it put his life moving forward in a different perspective. And the ironic part is that he felt at first that he couldn't afford to leave his young kids at home. He had in-laws helping him out, plus his own parents. But what was really powerful is that he realized how important it was for him to gift that to himself, because he had been in this state of loss and sorrow for a couple of years. And he recognized that wasn't doing him any good, and it was actually going to Yellowstone helped him reinvigorate his life moving forward. And I guess a personal story would be I started to come out as a gay man in, oh gosh, about 2005, and I left the park because I thought that I couldn't be gay and out and myself and make a living. I thought that somehow those things, you know, didn't belong together, and I was really struggling with belonging and fitting in. And I realized over the course of the next winter that I did belong, and part of it was a very powerful dream I had, and I dreamt that a grizzly bear made a den in front of my house, and he dug this big hole, and he spent the winter there, and he was just very strong and confident and trusting in his sleep. And when the snows melted in my dream, the bear came out, and he just kind of yawned and stretched and looked around, and he saw the world was fine, and he realized that he was fine. And to me, that was just a big dream from nature telling me that I belonged, and it's time for me to bring my gifts to the world and to stop worrying about, you know, whether I fit in or not, because I do. And in nature, everything belongs. And that was just really powerful and just kind of reignited my own desire to help more people connect with nature where their feet are and help them change their lives.
What moved you to move from that career at Yellowstone into your own life nature business? I'm sorry. Life nature business. I'm sorry, I was tongue-tied here.
I'm sorry, can you share the question again, please?
Yeah, what moved you to move on from that career at Yellowstone National Park into your own life nature business?
Well, part of it was once I come out, I realized that I wanted to be in a larger city than one of the gateway towns to Yellowstone, where I could just, you know, meet other people who are gay and lesbian and just find out, you know, how other people integrated who they were, their community and their careers. And for a while, I just did some odd jobs, and I just tried to sell my photographs and thinking I could make a living doing that. And I had a business coach about 6 years ago who just said, when are you going to stop hiding behind your cards? And I thought, okay, I know exactly what she means. And he said, Obi, you know, you're a gifted, you know, teacher and educator and mentor. Maybe, you know, your real gift is not just sharing your cards and your photographs with people, but helping them know and learn what you know how to do very well. And I thought, she's onto something, and I need to figure this out. So over the next year or so, I basically, through trial and error, came up with different ways to serve people, and I settled on what works best for right now. And I'm still, you know, growing and learning, figuring out what's going to work best given my current clients and future clients. But it's just reignited this whole new process of discovery about, okay, what are the common steps to connecting with nature? How can you make it consistent? How can you go deeper? How can you connect that to your work, to your house of worship, to your family, to your loved ones, to your neighborhood? It's really been an exciting ride so far, and I just feel like I'm just scratching the tip of the iceberg as far as where this can all go, as far as helping people change their lives.
What further advice would you like to share with our listeners whom you've probably inspired to get out and take in more nature on their own? What steps can they be taking right where they are right now?
Sure. One thought is a quick tool that you could use would be come up with some things and write them down on pieces of paper, quick things that you can do to get out in nature, something that would cost you, say, less than $10, something that would cost you less than, say, 2 or 3 hours, and put them into a cookie jar, a jar like that, and when it comes time for your weekend, whatever that looks like for you, you reach your hand in your cookie jar, and that's what you do. So maybe you've written down 10 or 20 things that you would like to do or haven't done, and it could be something you do with yourself, it could be something you do with other people, it might just be a longer walk or going to a farmer's market, or, and there's nothing wrong about this. You could watch a, you know, David Attenborough video or, you know, Carl Sagan. It doesn't matter. But just something that connects you with sometimes the unknown and the unknowable, the mystery. And also it's just a gift that feeds your soul and your heart. So one thought is just to write down several things. And then when it comes time to the weekend, instead of thinking, well, I'm going to plan to do this, you just pull it out of the cookie jar and that's what you do. And to me, that's just a nice metaphor for sometimes nature brings you weather you don't maybe particularly welcome, but it's here anyway, so enjoy it or adjust to it. And it's the same idea. You're bringing a little bit of a surprise into your life. That's one thought. Another is to have a photograph or a picture or an illustration of something that is from nature, reminds you of nature, and you might keep one picture with you in your planner or as a screensaver or somewhere else. So when you're on the go and you want to take 10 minutes, you can at least slow down, breathe, relax, enjoy that photograph, and let that photograph with that image transport you to a place where you can rejuvenate and be inspired and be at peace. Let me think of one other thing for everybody. Another is just to take 10 and sit outside when you're having lunch or a break and leave your cell phone perhaps on vibrate or off and don't have anything to write with and see if you can get yourself past the point of, you know, thinking, I got to do this next or, you know, gosh, I forgot to do that. But just train yourself to relax and observe and notice without having an agenda. We're thinking about other things, and I'm really skilled at helping my clients do that as just a beginning habit to develop. So those are three things right there that I come to mind.
Fantastic.
How will folks reconnecting with nature help us to create a more resilient, healthy, and earth-friendly future?
Well, my feeling is that if your life is out of balance, or you don't have time for yourself, or if other people's needs are always coming ahead of yours, well, that's not a healthy place to be. And sometimes it's just as little as reclaiming half an hour of your life back during the day or during the week or at night or on the weekend. To me, it's when you connect with nature, you begin to connect with your own rhythms more. And you begin to have, I would say, less tolerance for BS, and you also begin to articulate with other people what's really important for you. So I think, you know, more people, when they do that, start saying no to a lot of, I don't know, overcommitments. They might let other people know that, hey, you know, I need some time for myself on the weekend. I know we're a couple, but I really need this hour, and, you know, thanks for understanding. To me, it's just when you connect with nature, it's like you're reclaiming your own life back, and that gives you the skills to navigate your work life and anything else that comes your way. And we're all going to have times where we need to reach out and ask for what we need, and to me, that's where nature connection really helps you do that, because you're giving yourself what you need instead of waiting for someone to give you permission or waiting for, you know, certain circumstances to be happening in your life before you give yourself the gift that you need. Does that make sense? Did I answer your question or do you want more?
Yeah.
Okay. You indicated when we were talking before the show that you would have some gifts and offerings at your website for our listeners, and I was wondering if you would expand on that.
Yes, for people who would like to learn more and become part of the Your Life Nature community, please reach out to me. Go to yourlifenature.com. That's yourlifenature.com. And when you go there, there's two things you can do. One would be click on the green free e-zine banner, and you'll receive free and always free e-zines talking about nature connection tips and suggestions and stories and submissions and sometimes even poetry. And so that's one way to be involved. And then if you feel like you're ready to move from where you are and have more nature in your life, you need the support and accountability to make it happen. I do have a couple of half-hour slots every week that you can basically contact me to see, you know, if we can fit you in for a free call. And what you would do is just go to yourlifenature.com, click on the contact button, and a screen will pop up, and you just let me know that you're interested in the free nature discovery call, and we'll do our best to get something on the calendar so we can explore with you, see what your vision is looking like and how you'd like more nature in your life, and to see if it might be a great fit to work together.
Well, thank you. This has been a wonderful discussion. Is there any closing thought that we skipped over that you might like to add before we
end? Sure. Do you know the poet Mary Oliver?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. She has this great quote, and it's something that's, I don't know, it's been sort of like my mantra for the past 10 years, or I forget exactly, but I think it's about right. She says, "What will you do with your one wild, precious life?" And I just love that quote. I lost my mom not that long ago, and you know, I just think about the role that she played in my life and her own ways in which she appreciated nature. They didn't look a lot like mine. She wasn't climbing mountains and hanging out near grizzly bears, but my point is that no matter where your feet are, no matter how old you are, no matter where you are in your work life, there's ways to connect with nature, and there's ways to keep that wild spirit inside of you that's very unique, fueled and fed and nurtured and encouraged, because there's someone out there who's going to really be inspired by your life and by what you're doing. And I think the greatest thing you can do is to feed your soul and your heart and your body through nature connection, and that just enthusiastically ripples out and helps other people. So in closing, I'd like to say that what will you do with your one wild, precious life? Do something that's meaningful and valuable and important to you. And don't worry about how it looks or how it turns out. Just do it.
Mm. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank
to you and to our listeners. And we advocate that anybody who wants to learn more about that, go to Hobie's website. And if you are interested in helping us to co-create a more resilient, equitable, and earth-friendly future, please go to our website, which is www.envisionthismedia.com. And there is an opportunity there to make a contribution, which will make it possible for us to bring many more inspiring visionaries your way. So thank you, Hobie, and thank you, listeners.
Yeah, thanks, Hobie. This was a wonderful interview.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed our time together, and I hope you have a wonderful fall season until we connect again.
It's been a gorgeous fall.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. That's nice.